Welcome, welcome.
Welcome to Remainders, softcore version.
This is the softcore version.
I knew it. Just, I knew you're going to wear the glasses. Amazing.
I am just getting from my villa in France. And oh. I've been swimming in my swimming pool, and I need a cigarette so bad.
You're making my day. This is amazing. I was like, I know Pat's going to have to like do something cool because like you're the cool guy on this podcast, in my opinion. So this 1960s vibe, it fits you so well. Maybe the beatnik version with the beard, but yes.
This is one of the sexiest films I've ever seen. These are the hottest people and the horniest people we have going for a film for us lately. So, I mean, I'm the one with the trash picks, but these are the classy picks that we've begun to enjoy. So.
Well, I got to say, this has been a little bit of a nervous week for me because I love this film.
Nice. It's
kind of something that I didn't know if you would like at all. So I as our viewers and listeners would suspect, I don't know what you're about to say to me about this film, but I will just preface it by I was a little nervous to talk about it with you because I was like, is he going to not like it? Is he going to, you know, does he not? I don't know if I know fully if you even really like foreign films in general. I mean, I know that you appreciate them, but I'm not sure how often you watch them. And so I thought this would be a really great discussion on something where I wasn't anticipating anything from what you might say coming back to me after seeing it.
No, I mean, I love foreign film. I mean, I'd say I don't seek it out as much as you do, but in my experience, I mean, that's whenever I get tired of the Marvel films, it's always a reliable source of film to go to. No, I mean, just off the back, I love this movie. I had such a great time watching it. I feel like we have discussed a pretty decent amount of foreign films in the past. But I mean, as I mentioned, you're definitely the old Hollywood buff between the two of us. I think that's just a pretty matter of fact that your admiration for older Hollywood is a little bit stronger than mine. And not even so much admiration, it's just you'd spend more time with it than I do. But this was definitely a great pick, I'd say so. I think it's a lot to dig into. I mean, we'll get to it, but like I said, this was a pretty sexy fucking movie. As I think some of the stuff I've kind of researched on, it almost looks like an ad for hot people, hot rich people at some points of it. So, and if it has been kind of its legacy sometimes.
Well, La Piscine, just backstory on why I chose it. This film was one that I took in completely focused on. It's, you know, we've talked a lot about not having your phone around when you watch films so that you can really dig in. And I mentioned on a previous version of this podcast that when I saw this film, it did something to me. And I think I only was able to let it do something to me because I was fully immersed in it. Mm-hmm. Pardon the pun on the swimming pool immersed, but you know what I mean. I was just very, very engaged with it. And it was also at a time in my life where I was laid up after a surgery. So I kind of had the time, right? And so I got to preface it by saying, if you do watch this film, please do take the time to really let it soak in. Don't listen or don't watch it with English subtitles or anything like that. Really let yourself become part of this film. And I think you'll enjoy it. I think you'll be taken on a ride. I'm still trying to figure out on our second watch here, because I, like I said, I watched this about a year ago in August, and now having watched it, getting ready to talk about it with you, I still have like so much that I'm feeling, that I'm thinking about in regards to this film. And I remember when I first watched it, I did a ton of research because I was so interested in the actors who I did not know before watching it a year ago. That's almost makes me feel bad to say that because they're incredible, of course. And they're especially Alain Delon. I hope I'm saying his name right. It's a French name, but he was a gigantic star in Europe. And so was Romy Schneider. And, you know, that's kind of the thing is that I like to open up my understanding of film outside of the United States. And this is a very good film for that. Anytime I watch this, then that gives way to other, you know, works that the director had done. And so I've been kind of on a tear with that kind of stuff since I first saw this film. But this is a little bit where it started. Not that I hadn't seen a lot of foreign films before. Of course I had, but these were like, this was all new territory for me. And did you kind of feel the same way? Like, what was your initial first thought of when I gave this as, you know, a movie we would talk about? Were you like, let me say it this way. I have trouble going into like prison movies. I have trouble going into spaghetti westerns right off the bat, and I have trouble going into war movies, and I also have a little bit of trouble saying, okay, I'm going to sit down and watch a foreign film. There's nothing wrong with all those films and those genres. In fact, when I watch the films in there, I actually love them, and I could take a ton out of it, especially I remember feeling that way about Sergio Leone in the Dollars trilogy. As soon as I saw it, I was like, wow, why did I fear these movies? They're amazing. I was just wondering what your feeling was that way.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm a little surprised that you're saying that you're a little hesitant with any of those genres, because I know we've talked about multiple movies in all those genres. I mean, when you suggested this, I didn't find it as surprising at all. So I thought this, my brief research before I watched it, it seemed like it was up your alley. In terms of like a pivotal piece of the late 60s, kind of like right before the, you know, the revolution of 70s cinema. And so I was pretty excited for it. It seemed like in line with one of the older Hollywood picks that you were going to go with.
Yeah, you know me, I just kind of like go on these tangents about stuff. Once I like find a film, it's like you can't stop me. I go down these rabbit holes of other stuff that I'm influenced by. Even when you look at stuff that's filmed in Europe, and the location itself and the swimming pool that they all gather around is such a character in this film, you know? And that's what I like about a lot of foreign movies that you watch, is like you see these old cities and towns that become sort of a character in the film themselves.
Yeah, no, I mean, a little documentary I saw after that, it was really kind of stretching out how, like you said, the swimming pool was a character in it. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to try to like maybe just a brief synopsis of this movie. I mean, it's a super simple setup, but we basically have Jean-Paul and Marianne, a wealthy couple, basically summering in their villa in France. Looking hot, swimming, looking great in all their clothes and just living it up. And they find out that their friend Harry will be stopping by. Turns out Harry has a daughter, Penelope, and it's basically their time together at this villa. And it comes out that Marianne had previously possibly had a rumor of having a thing with Harry in the past. And this basically just throws a wrench into the entire relationship moving forward. So that's basically the setup that we have. I mean, I'm definitely simplifying it, but for listeners who haven't seen it, it goes from there. And like I said, it's the swimming pool becomes a character, and it's really the setting and the style that kind of tells a lot of the story.
Yeah, that was really great. Thanks for, you know, doing a little synopsis, because that's it really. There's, you know, you've got four main characters in this film, and they're all intertwined with each other in some way. And there's jealousy raging. I have a one sentence line that I came up with to start off this conversation with you, which I think sums up the movie pretty perfectly. Sexual tension comes to a climax in the form of murder in the French Riviera. On the French Riviera, revealing a dark side of luxury. I think that this is like such a crazy film to watch, because, you know, when you're surrounded and you've got nothing else to do all day but laze around and kind of see everybody with their partner, you know, there's booze involved, and you're on vacation. Like, what's that a recipe for? You know, a pretty amazing and compelling screenplay based off of a book, which you would think on, you know, if you look at it from far away, how could I make this interesting? But it's super interesting. And a lot of that is the credit to the actors, which is Alain Delon played Jean-Michel or Jean-Paul, which is, as you said, dating Romy Schneider. Alain Delon had dated Romy Schneider in real life. So a lot of times, you know, for people who are listening to this, if you can put yourself back into the late 60s when this was filmed, they were a couple, and a pretty big couple, sort of like Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton were like gigantic here in the United States around that time. And they were like the it couple. I suppose you could say like Pete Davidson and, you know, yeah, Pete Davidson, and I forget her name again.
Who's he dating? One of the famous people.
Kim Kardashian. Yes. Well, because everybody's, you know, famous couples, right? And so that's kind of how this couple was in Europe. And then they had broken up. And so this was like they're getting back together, they're repairing. And so it really, if you can put yourself in the time when it was made, it was pretty awesome for the audience to come up and see this film and see these two together, because all they wanted was these two to be back together. And here they are playing a romantic couple, which played off amazing. I mean, you can see the chemistry between the two of them in this. It's like blazing hot in it.
Yeah, I had no idea that they were a real couple in real life. Yeah, I'm certainly was not familiar with much of the work of the actors outside of this, but seeing that there's a lot of prestige, especially in John Paul's previous past. But yeah, that definitely adds like a whole layer to it. I mean,
yeah, now that you know that, can you think about that? Like, whoa, like some of the scenes, you know?
Their relationship was pretty convincing. And one of the things I was curious about, like, maybe it's just your reaction, like, what do you think, like, their relationship, Jean-Paul and Marianne, what do you think their relationship was like before Harry and Penelope showed up? Like, do you think their relationship was in a good place or a bad place?
I mean, I think it, to be honest with you, it feels like it's all about sex, you know, and fun. Yeah. I'm not sure, you know, there's we'll get into it, I'm sure, as we go through the story and what happens. But if feels very, very sexually driven in the beginning part of this film between the two of them. And those scenes are, like you said, super sexy. And I wonder, you know, that's a good question, because I don't know if there's that much depth there. Like one of the things between Harry and Jean-Paul that kind of comes out with the jealousy is that Harry is this successful, wealthy, he owns a Maserati, and you know, he's in the music business, and he's pretty, you know, cool on the surface and has a lot of money, while Jean-Paul is just this kind of flying by the seat of his pants, a writer who, even at one point, Harry's like, I'm glad you gave up writing, like, kind of not down on his luck, but he just doesn't really have anything going on. He's not working, and he's along for the ride with Romy Schneider's character, Marianne.
I mean, he definitely gave up writing. He took the job at the ad agency because he gave up writing, right?
Oh, you're right. Actually, he's in advertising. But yeah, I don't think he's really that involved in it.
For sure. I mean, I read that as like he basically gave up his dream of trying to be a writer and kind of just accepted a everyday life at an ad agency, which he wasn't too thrilled about.
Right.
He even says, like, when he's talking about that, some days I just want out. And it comes out later that he had previously tried to commit suicide. And so I definitely read that as just like somebody who was very unhappy with his current situation.
Definitely. Yeah. That's a great way to put it, because like, he just kind of seems like he's floating, not to use another pun, but he's sort of floating around there and not sure where he completely fits in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to put it. I like that.
One thing I wanted to bring up, and I'm not sure if you'd be familiar with this. Have you ever seen The Umbrellas of Cherbourg before?
Absolutely not.
You should see that film, or we should talk about it one time. It's a great, great, great musical. And the music was done by Michel Legrand, who also did the score of this film. And one thing that you might be interested in knowing, which I thought was incredible, he died in 2019, and I had known him from Umbrellas of Cherbourg. But when he died, one of my favorite bands, who I just actually saw over here at the Greek Theater a couple months ago, Beach House, the lead singer, Victoria Legrand, is the niece of Michelle. I think it's Michelle Legrand, M-I-C-H-E-L. I don't know exactly the French pronunciation, but I've been following his career and knowing him from these movies and films that he had been involved in. And lo and behold, his niece is the woman who sings in Beach House, which I think is so cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm definitely a big fan of Beach House. I can definitely feel the vibe of Pet Cinema in that. So there's a little I saw that Penelope, the actress, she was actually dating Serge Gainsbourg while she was filming this. The actress, and I thought that was like a little a nice little insight to French culture.
Well, look at all that stuff. Look at how all these lines cross from, you know, real life to make believe. And I don't know if you watched any of the extra features on the Criterion version. If anybody's out there has Criterion Channel, there's a ton of great extra features, because this film, I didn't realize it, but in 2021, it was restored. And so that's why it has such a big presence on Criterion Channel right now and has all these extra features. They restored the film. It looks beautiful, of course. And there's a lot of interviews now, especially with Alain Delon, talking about how he can't watch this film. You know, if you read anything about him, he had such a big connection with Romy Schneider that she passed away at 43, very early in her life. And he was very involved, just like it kind of is just like what I was saying with Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton. Sort of like a little tragedy involved there. And so a lot of tragedy involved. And so I think that they were intertwined with each other really, really personally, even though they didn't date after their first time, they were very close and also did movies other than this film together. And he talks about how it's really hard to watch this movie and that he hasn't watched it since, just because of the personal connection he has, not just to her, but to the other actors and the director of this film as well.
Yeah, I bet. That's got to be wild to have that kind of time capsule in your life be on stage for everybody to see. And then obviously it's probably not something that you want to visit yourself.
Yeah, totally. That's a great way to put it. So I'm sorry, I wanted to say one other thing.
Yeah,
because we're talking a little bit about the scenario surrounding the time period of when it was made. So all that was going on, all these relationships, and they were all culminating to making this. But one other thing that happened, and it's kind of a blip on the radar. They don't talk about it in any of that extra feature stuff, but you can actually find out a little bit about this. But during the filming of it, Alain Delon's bodyguard died kind of like in a mysterious circumstances during the filming of this. And they don't really talk too much about it. I don't think he's talked a ton about it. Stefan Markovic was his name. It's found murdered in a rubbish dump near Paris. And it's kind of another weird thing that's surrounding this film that, like, when you view it and you kind of have that understanding, it's like, wow, that such weird, bizarre circumstances going into like the filming of this kind of personal movie, you know?
Yeah, and that's the stuff that usually adds to the myth making and kind of general presence of a film. Something that, you know, most films made in 1969 aren't being talked about, but this one still is, though. So it's usually stuff like that that kind of adds to the mythos of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Romy Schneider, we talked a little bit about, you know, she also had a little bit of a woman before her time moment for her. And if you read up on her Wikipedia, I found out that she's one of 28 women that was under the banner of We've Had Abortions during her time as an actress from 1971. And I thought how apropos or how timely for what we're going through right now in the world. And I also think like just how much of a badass she is. When you find out more about her, see other films that she's been in, she's a very strong personality. Even when you see interviews, she's very straightforward. She knows what she's talking about. She knows what she wants to say. When they ask her about her relationship with Alain Delon, she's very much like, well, we're actors. Why wouldn't we be in a film together? You know, just because of this person, like she could really take herself out of that personal shit to follow her craft and her passion, which was acting. And I really like that. I think that that fact adds a little bit to just, again, what a badass she was.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And did you mention, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, and she had one of her sons passed away very tragically too. It was something else that adds to her life. Alain Delon talks about it in the extra features on the Criterion channel, actually. And he actually had them interred together after she passed away. He was very involved in that. Again, this is like super personal stuff. And the reason I'm bringing it up is I think it just adds to this film. When you find all this stuff out and you see it for a second time, this film really, 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 it's like you're watching someone's diary or something, you know, it's an interesting feeling.
Well, the acting, I think, is the best part of the movie, because there's so much quiet space in the film. You know, it's not a very talky film, even though it's mostly all just set around this swimming pool and in their villa. And yet, like, half of the story is told kind of through facial expressions and kind of the body language that they're giving each other. All four of them are giving each other throughout the movie. I mean, there's a dinner scene that is super tense when they're having Chinese food for dinner, which this is some of the tastiest looking Chinese food. I don't know, there's something about the acting when they're eating it that makes it look absolutely delicious.
Yeah, you're right. It looks very, very well presented.
I was starving after I watched that part. But I mean, it's a super tense scene. And I mean, it's kind of like in the middle of the film. I guess we should say, like, we have like spoilers in this movie. We're going to talk about it all. If you haven't seen it, I mean, the movie's, you know, what, over 50 years old. So
yeah, I think unlike Elvis, like, we didn't want to give too much away here. It's like, all right, enough time's passed, right?
For sure. But just a kind of disclaimer, I'm sure there's people who haven't seen this, but we'll be talking about everything in the film. But this dinner scene is like halfway through the movie, and it's like super tense, and everybody's just kind of looking back and forth at each other, like trying to figure out who's fucking each other. And it's mostly told like through their glances at each other, and then dialogue about the food. Like, nobody's talking about like anything directly. It's just passive conversation about the food. Harry even has like this super antagonistic line. He's like, the restaurant, he's talking about the restaurants while he's traveling are fantastic. And he looks to Marianne, he's like, you remember, right? And it's just like this one line where it's just like, it just shows everything that he's like of their past. But then at the same time, saying it right in front of Jean-Paul to like kind of belittle him or antagonize him.
You could not have been like more dead on about like the drama in that scene, which is very, it's set up very simply. But it all has to do with the writing, doesn't it? I mean, it all has to do about what they're talking about and how everyone's skirting around everything just to kind of like have those daggers. And that line especially is the dagger right at their relationship, because it's like, I've always been better, the better guy for, you know, Marianne, because do you remember when we went here and when we went there, and I'm rich and I have all this money and I'm able to get you to these places that you enjoyed, and we had this thing together. And it says all of that in just those, that one sentence that he does talking about a restaurant.
Yeah. Like, Harry is like, he's definitely not, I mean, he's encouraging Jean-Paul to like commit to Marianne. He's like saying like, so when's the wedding? And I think he's being genuine, but at the same time, he's making it very clear that like, oh yeah, we had a thing in the past. She wasn't for me, but you know, she might be good for you. It's like this, yeah, this super douchey kind of relationship or friendship that they have.
And even though behind his back, he's trying to like make a move on her, you know.
Yeah.
And everybody's, I mean, really close. You know, that's the other thing. It's like, you're not even sure. Like, when there's a party scene later in the film when Harry does bring back a bunch of people from the town and everybody's dancing with everybody. It very much feels like that free love, like 60s kind of vibe that's flowing through there, you know? So you're not even sure. Like, is everybody fucking everybody in this film? Right. Like, you're not even sure.
Yeah. I mean, a little bit of that's cultural, you know. I mean, Americans are a little prudish compared to France, in some ways.
But yeah, well said. You're right.
But yeah, as an introvert, when Harry showed up with like 50 people, if he showed up with 50 people in my villa, I'd push him in the pool too. So
yeah, I mean, it was a little like, it's not even your place, like, that you're staying at, you're visiting, and you bring all these people back. Yeah,
I was like, this feels like a horror film. He's just like one car after another. He shows up after drinking out at night, and then both Jean-Paul and Marianne are just like super welcoming of it. I mean, Jean-Paul not so much, but
well, I think that's another way of getting at Jean-Paul right there, of course, because he knows Jean-Paul isn't drinking. You know, that's the other thing, is Jean-Paul doesn't drink, and he's kind of like offering it to him all the time and kind of trying to get him to do it. And I think that just goes along with the character of like, you know, that he was suicidal, you know, that he had some, you know, issues in his life, and he's staying away from the booze, yet Harry kind of knows that and is trying to get him to like dive into it, which ultimately is Harry's undoing.
That one point on the quitting drinking, that adds a lot to like the backstory of I want to call him JP just for to Americanize it. I don't know if I should do that. So he gives up drinking. He gave up. It didn't even sound like, I mean, I got the impression that he just gave up drinking because it was kind of like not thrilled by anything anymore. He gives up the writing. He accepts his job he probably doesn't even want. And so it kind of feels like he's in that stage where he's like trying to make amends with himself. But then obviously this entire scenario with Harry and Penelope shows up, and that just kind of throws a wrench into his entire character's trajectory.
Yeah, totally. It's like, maybe like you, that's a great question off the bat that you asked in the beginning about, you know, how were they before everybody showed up? Because when all these people start to get involved, it does kind of set things in the tailspin. At first you're thinking too, like, this is a great couple, you know, but when Penelope comes, all of a sudden it's like, you know, don't like, I should be able to be free to date who I want. You're like, hold on a second. Like, you guys have this amazing, intense sexual relationship from what we're seeing on screen. And you're also like here on this amazing vacation. Everything's perfect. Why would you fuck this up? You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that, like I said, that just kind of goes so much into like the performance from, I'm sorry, the actor's name again?
Alain Delon.
Yeah, Alain Delon's performance. He just gives like so many great, like, there's a lot of longing looks in this movie. Like, everybody's just kind of longing for something else while like staring at somebody else while they're doing something around the pool. And he just kind of masters that tortured kind of look multiple times through this movie.
Well, something I noticed from second watch, speaking of looks, is I almost feel like once Penelope shows up, you see this film through her eyes, almost as like she's the most adult in the room, even though she's the youngest child of Harry. And it's like she's watching the jealousy between these two men play out. And you can see Romy, Marianne is her name in the film. She's the only other woman. And it almost feels like those two, it's like a mother-daughter relationship almost. It's a very interesting dynamic between all the characters as it progresses. And if you notice with Penelope, never gets in the pool. The only character we don't see in the pool is Penelope, almost foreshadowing her fear. And she even talks about being afraid to her father, who ultimately, this is the biggest spoiler, dies in that pool. Harry dies in the pool. And so, you know, that his daughter doesn't really want to be in the villa. You never see her get in the pool, and you see her constantly judging and watching and soaking in, again, pardon the pun, soaking in.
You had these all planned. I'm convinced you had some of these, at least half of them.
But soaking in all that's going on in these two men, which is like, you know, the, as you talked about before, machismo between the two, kind of one-upping each other. One shows up with a sports car, you know, one's brutish about his girl. And you know, it's weird that you have this young girl kind of be a little bit like removed and doesn't even want to be a part of it. You know, she's just reading her book outside, and then the only time we do see her get wet is when she leaves the villa and she's away from it, and then she feels like she could really be free, and she goes into the ocean with Alain Delon's character Jean-Paul at that point. Because that scene we talked about a minute ago of them having Chinese food, if you notice, her hair is wet, and they mentioned, oh, she's like, yeah, I went for a swim in the water, in the ocean, but she won't get into that swimming pool.
Did they have sex?
Well, it's implied. And then they also talk later on, there's a scene between Romy, or Harry, at least that fateful night, because really that dinner scene, to everyone who's listening, is what sparks the scene that comes next, which is when Harry does die in the pool at the hands of Jean-Paul, because they have a confrontation. And in that scene, to answer your question, he says, you had sex with my daughter. I believe he says that at one point.
Oh, he said that overtly? I missed that then.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, because yeah, you know, it was implied enough. I just wanted to be sure. I mean, I guess it really doesn't matter anyway. The implication is enough, and to make them go head to head at each other at the pool. When Harry comes back from a night of drinking and he starts just pounding the blue label again, and when they're outside at like 3 a.m, I was like, oh yeah, this is definitely where this movie's going now.
Did you know anything about that before getting into it, that there would be a death?
I feel like if you call a movie The Swimming Pool and it's about a bunch of adults behaving badly, something like that was going to happen.
It was a slow burn towards something the whole time, because you're probably like, well, what's the point, right? At this, we're just watching an interesting character study,
right. I mean, it had a stage play feel to it, and so I don't know, maybe I've just seen enough movies where it was like somebody's gonna die in the swimming pool probably. So not to say it was like obvious or anything, and I'm the last person who like tries to like figure out plots and whatnot,
right?
So like,
me too,
that's certainly not how I watch movies, but it seemed like that was certainly where this one was going. So
gotcha. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that happens getting into the scene where Harry dies, and mostly it's about what we've been talking about here, not just that scene of him needling Harry and kind of making it known that Marianne really loved me the most and we had a great time together and your life is stupid in comparison to mine. That was happening the whole movie. And so you can really kind of understand, as Jean-Paul says later to Marianne, he says, I had a moment of madness. Mm-hmm. But he's basically, after that whole scene, and he breaks up with Marianne over the dinner, and Harry says, I'm leaving tomorrow and I'm taking Penelope. It starts to unravel after they have that Chinese food dinner, and so everything's chaos, and Jean-Paul says, I'm going to stay downstairs, I'm sleeping down here tonight, essentially breaking up with Marianne. And that's when he notices Harry come home later on in the night drunk. But he has also been drinking. Jean-Paul had been drinking. So this is like setting up where he walks out and the two confront each other. And finally, they've been both stewing on it since that dinner. And you know they're going to have it out somehow, right?
Yeah, I love when Harry looks at Jean-Paul pouring a drink. He's like, oh, when did you start drinking again? He just looks right back at him. He's like, tonight.
Yeah. You just know, like, why. Yeah.
You're laying it out for him right there. Like I said, like that scene leading up to it is like so well done. Like, it was just like so well paced, and then each time, I mean, so like Harry takes a swing at Jean-Paul, and that's how he ends up falling in the pool. And then it's just like such a slow burn of like, he's obviously not gonna have to do much to let this guy drown in the middle of the pool. And he still kind of goes out of his way to make him do it, the fact. So
yeah, it's kind of like one time, I don't know what Hitchcock documentary I was watching, but they had talked about how murder is not actually that easy. And that, you know, Hitchcock would play on that a lot, you know, and make it like very hard to sort of kill somebody, almost comical at times. And so that's sort of how this plays out. Like you said, it's like the whole movie is a slow burn, and even the death scene is a very come on, what are you messing with me for? I can't swim, I'm drunk. And like, he has like six tries to get out of the pool before he finally succumbs to like a pretty serious scene where he does die. But before that, it's pretty playful. It's like playing with him in the swimming pool, you know. It's like a kid playing with a bee that floated into the pool and keeps on letting him out just to let him dry off to pull him back in.
Yeah. And I'm curious, and like, what's going on through Harry's head at that time? And he's drunk, but at the same time, I doubt he would. I doubt he was thinking that Jean-Paul was capable of doing that. So
that's a good point, because he thinks that the guy's a loser. So he probably in his head is thinking like, yeah, he is playing with me. That's why it's really trusting. He'll put his hand out like he's going to let him back in. Like, oh, I am playing with you. It's pretty diabolical. And the movie does such a great job getting you to this point. Again, a slow burn, and why it's important to watch unobstructed to the entire film. Because, you know, those cues, all of that dialogue, everything leading up to that scene is why this is kind of like such a brutal scene, you know, such a brutal death scene. But even though it's not like gory or anything like that.
Yeah, no, it's not gory at all. Yeah, you're definitely feeling for him, and he's trying to get out of the pool, and John Paul's just not letting him have it. So,
yeah, I mean, there's such an intimacy with these characters up until this point. Like, it, you become so entwined with them, and that's such a credit to the writers to make these people interesting. It's such a credit to the actors that by the time that this scene happens, you're like raging with right along with them, you know, like that. Come on, Harry, like this is what you get for fucking with him, you know, the whole movie. Can't you just leave him alone? And like, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I mean, so maybe to get a little bit onto like, the next part, I mean, just so these are four like super hot people, and this entire movie's about style. And I kind of felt bad when the investigator shows up because he's like the only one that nobody in the movie wants to fuck. I mean, it almost felt weird because the movie, in one of those documentaries, somebody described it as like a claustrophobic setting, but it's outside. And it has no walls, but that's actually very true. It's like movies outside pretty much all the time, but it feels very claustrophobic. So when, after Harry's funeral, mm-hmm. the investigator shows up, and he really does feel like an outsider, like this outside presence is showing up to these now three people. And it definitely feels alien because you've just spent like an hour and a half with just the four of them, trying to like figure out who's doing what to who.
Yeah, totally. And it's very crazy because, you know, you're left here with Harry's daughter, who's part of the three, with the guy who murdered him. And, you know, of course, nobody knows, but there is an investigator that's on to it. Like, how could this just be a guy, drowning in the pool? He smells something has gone awry. And so, yeah, he shows up as this outsider. And up until this point, other than like the party guests who kind of were insignificant, they were only really there to serve the purpose of annoying Jean-Paul, in my opinion. So when the investigator comes up, it's like, it's very real. And I don't know, you know, do you at that point when the investigator comes there, like, do you want him to get caught? Like, do you even care? Do you want, you know, Marianne to know? Because now at this point, the relationship with Jean-Paul and Marianne is frayed, and you think he's going to be leaving with Penelope, which is Harry's daughter. So it's all this craziness after Harry dies that like, wait, everything just got fucked up. Now Harry dies. What happens now?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm curious on like what's going on through Jean-Paul's mind at that time. I mean, he's a pretty defeated guy, it feels like. So I almost feel like he's, you know, I doubt he wants to get caught, but and nothing in his actions do that, but he is very kind of mopish with his confession when he finally confesses to Marianne. I mean, he's just hanging down. He's like a kid who got caught basically without feeling much remorse. He's just like, yeah, I got caught, whatever.
Well, that's what I was saying a little bit about the motherly feel of Marianne, even though she is like sex, like epitomized in this film, she still had that motherly feel to Penelope. And then I felt it big time in the scene that you're talking about, like when she's like, come on inside, tell me what happened, you know? And then he finally kind of tells her everything. And like a kid would do, that a kid who finally gets to that point is like, I need to tell somebody, I'll tell my mom and everything will be better. And it kind of plays out that way. Didn't you feel that?
Yeah, no, I think you nailed it right there. That's a great way to phrase it.
Speaking of the sexiness of Romy Schneider, I don't know why I want to say Romy Michelle. Am I thinking of like that movie about the class reunion? Right?
That's a solid 90s pick.
Okay. Maybe we'll review that next time as a flip and a flop of this. But This scene, and I think it was just totally like French Italian cinema feel, something that I feel like if Anthony Bourdain was still around, he would probably play up a scene like this in one of his episodes, because he used to always play on those European film sort of scenes in No Reservations. But it's when the guys are driving around in the Maserati being all, you know, classic guy, let me drive as fast as I can. And they show these overhead scenes of them winding and going through the roads. And I just want to talk about this scene for a minute, because I didn't want to end our conversation without bringing it up, because it's such a beautiful testament to Jacques Deray. His name is Jacques Deray, right? I just want to make
director,
sure.
Right. Yeah, that's yes. Director. Yeah.
Jacques Deray. He did such a great job of directing these scenes of them driving the Maserati, the two men filled with jealousy and let me one up each other. And the women are back at the villa. And as they're doing this scene and you're seeing these amazing curves of the car going fast, you see Romy Schneider in bed as the character of Marianne, and she's naked. She's nude on the bed, but you see the camera go through her body and show the curves of as they're going through her. And it's beautiful, beautiful. And I just want to make sure I say that, because that's like the geeky artistic shit that I live for in these kind of films, especially these, like you said, European films that can feel like they can show that kind of stuff and be artistic about it and really not in a overly like being sexy just to be sexy. They're doing it in a way to add to the story, to add to the mystique of the film.
Yeah, no, that definitely, I didn't totally put those together when I saw that. So thank you for pointing that out. I mean, you're seeing them take the car for a ride, probably while talking each other about taking the woman for a ride at the same time.
Well, completely. That's why I'm bringing it up. And it adds to the scene, again, at the end of the swimming pool, you know, because it's like you got these two guys who are jealous over this girl. They both dated her, and they're going on a car ride in his Maserati, and then they're cutting the scene with shots of her nude on the bed, sleeping. I mean, come on.
No, I mean, again, it goes with the entire film. It's like, it's a gorgeously shot film, like in one of those documentaries on Criterion. They said one of the biggest influences, not necessarily on film, but just what unculturally, was that this movie kind of did almost feel like an ad for a clothing ad. And some of the scenes, and that's not to like say anything bad about it at all, but like, it's just the way it's shot. It is very pristine and focused on the fashion and the beauty of the characters, despite like everything, the inner turmoil that they're going through. I mean, some of the scenes were used in, like, I think it was a Dior ad for men's cologne or something, like just only like 10 years ago. So it's like, it was still like a recent ad for men's cologne that they were like pulling direct shots from this movie. Specifically parts when Jean-Paul is like at the pool, because the camera definitely focuses on his body just as much as the female bodies as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And as kind of like such a good time capsule too, like you're saying, for style and everything, and the clothing and everything, and in a few of the documentaries that I had seen about this film, there's a lot to say about the fact that it doesn't look dated. Like, it looks as cool now as it did then. And there's something about that sort of 60s style, late 60s style, that kind of never goes out of style. You know what I mean? Like, you can really admire it in so many of these scenes. Like, you showed up with those glasses, like, that looks just like a pair of glasses that he was wearing in the film. And the way he puts the cigarette in his mouth in that one scene, it's almost like beautiful just to watch the guy smoke, you know?
I mean, one thing I was realizing is like, yeah, everybody has agreed that smoking is bad for you, but smoking still looks pretty fucking cool on screen. Like,
smoking,
it just does.
Looks cool. It just, looks like, cool.
It's not a, I'm not telling anybody to smoke. Everybody who's smoking should probably cut back. I'm not scolding anybody, but it's bad for you. But like, and yet it still looks fucking cool. Like even last week when we were watching Under the Silver Lake, he's smoking in it, and it doesn't look stupid. I mean, it's shot in a way that it makes the character look cooler. I don't know what it is. It's not really fair because it's shit for your body, but it's just the fact that everybody's smoking in this film the entire time, and they all look pretty damn cool doing it.
You're right. I mean, I remember being at Suncoast back in the day, going to see a film, somebody would smoke in the film. And back then I did smoke cigarettes like an idiot. Again, not telling anybody you're an idiot if you smoke, but you know, it is bad for your body. And I try to be as healthy as I can nowadays, but I want to say, like, literally going to see films in the theater, there would be something about getting out of the film and lighting a cigarette for me that I just felt like I was as cool as what I just watched on film. And it was that's what films do to you, man. You know, yeah. It's like, it makes you feel different than you are than you actually are.
Cultural influence. There's definitely no shortage of that.
Yeah. Which is why it's so crazy sometimes the manipulation that does happen in advertising with smoking, because people know that. I know I can sell some cigarettes because of how cool it looks, right?
But yeah, everybody looks so cool in this movie. I mean, the guy's clothes, these shirts are banging, and they're like buttoned all the way down. Like there's like one scene when Harry shows up, he's got his shirt tucked in, it's a button-up shirt, but it's like the one button at the very bottom, and this is just like total normal for the guys wearing it at the time. I don't know how they're pulling it off, but it looks pretty damn cool. I mean there was a lot of stuff. I mean, the drink cart at the beginning, Marianne brings out this drink cart, and it just reminded me instantly, I mean, it's not a surprise, but Wes Anderson's last movie, The French Dispatch, they have this whole scene of preparing a drink cart. It's like this rotating drink cart that
somebody's preparing. That scene's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. It's all these different drinks for all the different people in the newspaper office, and it shows them preparing it, and it just reminded me specifically of that. And,
well, that, you know, especially French Dispatch, is definitely borrowing from, you know, 60s film.
I mean, I guarantee Anderson's, watched this a dozen times and is probably a big fan of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off if you had something more to say there, but I agree with you 100%. The aesthetically pleasing, relationship-wise, you could not be more engaged with the people that are, you know, for better or for worse, that are in this film. I think it has a lot to offer in a film that isn't filled with action or anything like that. I mean, it is very suspenseful, but it's a slow burn. And again, you know, you have to kind of, you don't necessarily relate to any of them on a level of like, you know, I'm going to be in the French Riviera vacationing anytime soon. But you can relate to them and sort of the dynamics of jealousy and everything else that's happening, you know, in a place that they can't really escape. They're all stuck in this beautiful villa, but they're taunting each other the entire time in very many different ways.
Like I was saying, it was somebody phrased it as rich people behaving badly, and not everybody's rich and not everybody's bad, but everybody can identify with fantasizing about one or the other.
Totally, yeah. So I'm glad that we watched it. And is there any final thoughts on this film? Do you think you'd watch it again?
I mean, I would have to. I mean, especially learning everything that you just pointed out, which is awesome. But like knowing a lot of the backstory behind it, I think it would add like a whole nother layer. So.
And, yeah, you know, totally. I mean, I definitely think it like takes you out, like it brings you somewhere, you know.
It's super cozy. Like this is like a movie. It's a slow burn, but like it's a movie that you could like start watching at any point, and just kind of even if you're not watching it directly, have it around the background because it's just got a vibe.
Totally.
Like we were saying, the visual appeal of everybody in it, but just the tone of it is kind of a cozy film.
I got to grab something. I forgot something. Hold on.
For our audiences, I'm enjoying Darren's artwork in the back. this
so gremlin. Like, the reason I know that I watched this in August and it was like shortly after my surgery and everything is because I was so inspired by the film. Like, I had never seen anything like it that I actually drew this scene from one of the my diary here. This is my like sketchbook diary. Yeah, like this scene, especially the way he was smoking and like the way it was in his mouth, it was just like super like, holy shit, this guy's just relaxed to the max at this villa. And then she comes out and she's in this white bikini and you're like, god damn, like she looks amazing. This is the couple to be, you know? So yeah, it was inspiring enough and like beautiful enough for me to be like, I need to document what I'm watching.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the perfect example of the scene where like so much of the story is told about by what they're not saying rather than directly what they are. The director's focus on like the setting of those characters, it just tells you so much, like just the way he's smoking his cigarette in a kind of passive way while she's talking is so good.
Yeah. And again, to credit to all of the people who put this film together, it definitely stands the test of time. We're talking about it here on Remainders. I'm glad that we opened up to something of a foreign film. I hope we do it again. Again, I haven't seen any other films with Alain Delon, even though all of his films and like the neo, I think there's a new neo sort of like noir collection of a lot of his films that he did, like these Italian gangster films that I have yet to watch, but they're all there on Criterion Channel to enjoy. So I will be doing that at some point. But again, it takes me a while to sort of get into these films, and maybe it's because they are foreign. Maybe because there's like a call to really do be engaged with them if you're going to embark on them. I feel like I can't watch a film that I have to really, really, really pay attention to if I don't want to put it on if I can't do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think that's a perfect way to put it. I mean, we're definitely going to have some more Across the Seas films and foreign films coming up. I mean, I have a couple Australian exploitation films that I think will make for a couple good episodes. And what I love, again, about some of these picks is, as we go back and forth with our picks, we're going to see the juxtaposition of high class and low class.
Yeah,
I'm happy to be throwing the trash at these sessions.
It's funny because even some of the picks that I have coming are like high class, but like it's kind of like, are they? Like even the Cassavetes pick, I feel like, you know, that's become high class, but I feel like, you know, Cassavetes has like known for this avant-garde sort of maybe one of the first independent filmmakers of all time. So it's kind of like, there's a lot to explore that like over time, those have become like such cherished, amazing films for the way that they were made. But like, you know, it's kind of like Petroikis. It's like, he just kind of picked up a camera and told a bunch of people that were out in the world to be in his movie. Not that they were amazing actors in their own right. They were just regular people, you know, that became part of this movie that now he's known more so for that style. And of course the subject matter is amazing and it's very real. But was it, can it be regarded as some of the best classic cinema of all time? We'll see. We'll have that conversation.
I mean, yeah, that's fully subjective. So, I mean, it goes a lot into what we were talking about before, the different ways to kind of like view a film. It's what you get out of it that is most important. And that can come from, you know, a French film from the 60s or a 80s horror film, or as we'll see, an Australian exploitation film. So,
yeah. And in Gina Rowland's performance, in Woman Under the Influence, which she has some shit in there that I cannot wait to talk about with you.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch that one again. I've seen it. I watched part of it recently. I'd seen it in the past, but I definitely have a lot of stuff I don't remember about it. So I'm pretty excited to catch up on, because I know you're a big Cassavetes fan, and I've definitely, everything I've seen of him is great. I just have some blind spots. And
I mean, I'm the same way with his filmography. At times it can be pretty drawn out. I mean, Pauline Kael had some pretty rough, harsh criticisms of Cassavetes, mainly because of these long drawn out scenes that sort of kind of seem to go on forever without a rhyme or reason. But the stuff with Gina Rowlands, because she was so fucking good. And I feel like she deserves to be talked about forever, because I don't want people to forget about her and only think about her as the older woman in The Notebook. I want people to remember how awesome she was in her husband's films, and that she was a star in her own right. Jim Jarmusch knew it when he put her in Night on Earth. And she's just recently passed, and I feel like it'll be great to talk about her career a little bit through Woman Under the Influence. And again, so are we watching that next, or are we watching your film next?
No, we're doing Women Under the Influence next time. Okay. Sorry, you just got me thinking about that scene with her and Winona Ryder in the taxi cab, which is, I think, one of my favorite parts of that film. Winona is so good. They just play off each other so perfectly.
Winona Ryder is another actor that we should be talking about in for so many movies, but I talk about it a lot, and I don't know the answer to this, but just as a food for thought for our audience out there, have you, you know, in most of the things that you go into the Stranger Things, you know, merchandising store for since the show started, and even with advertising, and when they do we did a drive-through experience here in LA, you never see Winona Ryder on any of that shit. Everybody else is being sold, branded, and I have to think, and this is just my own way of saying it, is that Winona Ryder is just that much of a badass that she's able to say, no, you're not putting my face on this shit. You're not selling me, you're not slapping a brand on Winona Ryder, you know?
I wouldn't imagine. Yeah, that definitely tracks with what I know about her style. So, I mean, she's still. We talked about it briefly. I haven't seen Stranger Things. I know she was in the first season. She's still in the show now.
Yeah,
She's still a major character.
Well, and it's funny that what timing they just did the second half of the fourth season is now available as of right now today on nice. Netflix, and I'm sure you know this show is going to explode because they have one more season left. So I'm sure whatever happens here and this last end of the fourth season is going to give way to some serious shit going into a fifth and final season.
Yeah, no spoilers on Twitter for anybody who hasn't seen it. So
yeah. but great to talk about this film, La Piscine, 1969 French film by Jacques Demy. I always want to make sure I'm saying these names right, because I am not French and I'm sure I'm bastardized them. But yeah, go see that film and let us know what you think. And yeah, at the end of it, buy some swimming trunks and some great 60s fashion like Patrick here. You'll love it. You'll be enjoyed. You'll be inspired.
I'm craving for a dip in the pool and a cigarette right after.
I'm almost bummed I didn't bring my Persol sunglasses to look as cool as you in this episode.
Oh, I mean, this film is a walking ad for awesome looking people.
Absolutely. So let us know what you think. I hope you enjoyed as much as we did. I enjoyed talking about this with you, Pat. I'm glad you liked the film, and we'll get back here next time with a vastly different film, John Cassavetes' Woman Under the Influence, starring Gina Rowlands.